This is File 6, Cycle 4. This is Jean McMillan. Today's date is December 4th, 2018. I am interviewing Dick Vreeland, who is going to talk about his career in singing with the Kent Congregational Church, the Kent Singers, Crescendo, the Lakeville Methodist Church, and the Housatonics, and anything else he wants to talk about. But first, we'll start with the really difficult things. What is your name?
My name is Dick Vreeland.
Now, you said that you were born in Ithaca. How did you come to Kent?
Blame all that on my father. When I was born, he was interning, or maybe doing a residency in veterinary medicine at Cornell, where he got his degree.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, this was after he and my mother came back from California, having eloped to Elkton, Maryland, and then being disowned by both families.
Oh, dear.
They ran to my great uncle's ranch in Paso Robles, and I carry his name because of that.
Ah!
So they came back, and Dad had to, this of course after his stint in the Marine Corps and World War II, but then he had to finish his high school because he left the gunnery to go fight in the Marine Corps.
Okay. Oh, he went to the gunnery.
He went to the gunnery, mm-hmm. That's correct. And then he came back and finished his high school, and then went to Cornell on the GI Bill, which he claimed then was the smartest thing the United States Congress ever did.
Yes, I've heard that before.
Yeah. In any case, lo and behold, I came along, and I was in Tompkins County Hospital in Ithaca, New York.
Mm-hmm.
After he finished his residency, he said, I want to go where it's, rustic. He moved to Coos Bay, Oregon with all of us. And I can remember looking at the stars through the windshield in the car as he drove and drove and drove. Oregon being what it is, there were very few sunny days, and my mother being what she is, said, I'm not living here anymore. So we came back. He knew the Housatonic River Valley very well because he had was an avid fisherman, but he also had been up on Mount Riga. A lot of the Vreelands were up on Mount Riga from time to time, mm-hmm. And he had come up there, and then he followed the Housatonic River all the way down to almost into Milford one day from Cornwall,
mm-hmm.
And he loved it. And now we're talking back, and this was probably in, late 40s when he did that.
Yep.
In any case, he decided that he was going to settle in Kent because he, of course, walked through there. And so that is how I got to Kent from Ithaca. They bought a house and started the practice there.
And did he deal in small animals?
He dealt in anything that came in the door back then.
Okay, so it would be horses, cows, as well as...
Yeah, he was pretty well known as a very good large animal diagnostician, so he did a lot of cattle at first, because
yep.
A lot of dairy farms. I can remember there were four different dairy farms on the way to Kent, and we were only 4 miles away.
Oh, sure.
His love really was horses. I can remember him being very enamored with the foals in the springtime.
Oh, yeah.
Got himself a pretty good name as a horse veterinarian.
Perfect.
Later on in his practice and practice life. So, but that was Kent, and that's how I got there and first started. I didn't start singing with the Kent Singers down there. That's what my singing down there was done in the Congregational Church.
You were in the choir.
I was in the what they call it back then? Oh, the junior choir.
Junior choir.
Yep, they called it the junior choir, and I had friends, of course, that were coming up through grammar school, and I remember. Gilbert Case was one of my schoolmates, and Gilbert and I had young soprano voices, and we could sing higher than any of the adult sopranos. So,
oh, it's a beautiful voice.
It was great. Those days are gone, but it was great at
the time.
It's
wonderful to have had that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that was my singing career in Kent, and I never did it again for probably 25 years. And came up here after coming back from Massachusetts, working up there for 4 years, and Susan, my wife, who I had known even as a younger person, because she had formerly been married to Mike Redmond, whose brother Patrick I went to school with also,
mm-hmm.
And so I knew her, and when we got together, I think it was for an ambulance dance, and that was you know, my history was written right then and there. So we got married after, maybe not even a year after that. And then, so I've been in Lakeville for the last 33, 34 years. During that time, Susan, my wife, was also rapidly becoming the church lady at the Lakeville United Methodist Church. And she thought it would be a wonderful idea if I sang in the choir. So I said, well, I haven't done any singing in a long time. So I did, and at that point, we got a new young pastor, Herb Miller.
Oh, yes.
And we got Dick Windler was our organist, and he said, Dick actually said, let's go see the Kent Singers and join them, which was back down to my hometown of Kent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, yeah, sounds like it might be interesting. And we went down there, and for about 4 years, the three of us went, or two, no, 3 years, the three of us went down there on rehearsal nights, and it was a boys' night out. We'd have dinner, and then we'd go to rehearsal, and then
I've lost somebody. Dick Windler and you, and who's the
third? Herb Miller came down with us.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And he... So the three of us would go out to dinner, usually a pizza or something, and then go over for rehearsal for 2 hours. That back then, of course, that was John LaFleur who started it, and he was glad to have us, and we had some good times doing the Kent Singers syllabus.
What kind of singing did the Kent Singers do?
The Kent Singers were primarily classical singers, but they would do, from time to time, some secular work, especially around Christmas time. But mm-hmm. for the most time, it was definitely classical choral. Nothing too grandiose. No double choirs or things like that, because there just weren't the numbers.
No, they wouldn't be.
But small motets and things along those lines we used to do. And we tried to do one of those things they do, not carols, they call them something else at Christmas time, and I'm not going to remember it right now.
That's all right.
I'll come up with it in an inopportune moment later on. That's what always happens.
Oh, yeah, all the time. How long were you with the Kent Singers?
It was Madrigals. And I was with the Kent Singers for, close to...
You
I'm trying to remember, because I was always singing when Sue was taking the kids to the Christmas tree lightings, because that was always a concert evening, so... That was probably 13 or 14 years I was with the Kent Singers.
That's a good long time.
Yeah, and then along came Christine Gebert. I imagine that was close to 16 years ago from today, because yeah. This is our 15th anniversary year for Crescendo. And she started Crescendo, and for the first year I didn't do it, but the second year... Again, I have to give Susan credit. She said, why don't you ever try to sing with them instead of going down to Kent? I said, maybe I could do both. That was not well received, but in any case, I went and auditioned for them and got the job, and I've been singing with them, or have been singing with them for, 11 to 12 of the 15 years that they're there. I haven't been singing for the last 2 years because my voice has gone south, but we're working on that and trying to figure it out.
What was your... voice, was it baritone or bass or tenor or?
Truthfully, I really had a range from first bass to second tenor, so I could do bass work, baritone work, and second tenor work. That wasn't discovered, however, until Christine got a hold of me she said, you can sing higher. I said, I know, but I don't usually. From that moment on, I became a tenor with Crescendo.
It took a little bit of tenors.
Time. Well, everyone looks for tenors.
Oh, yeah. What kind of singing does she do?
She is, of course, classical, but almost unanimously Baroque, from the Baroque era. Yeah. And she is forever finding...
Unpublished.
Yeah. Exactly. Unpublished works, sometimes by known composers of the day, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but just found. We did a work called Totentanz, which is the Dance of Death.
Oh, that was a fabulous concert.
That was a good concert.
Whoa.
And that was found in an old burned out, not even a church, but a small church, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was depicted in a mural that went around the inside wall of the church, mm-hmm. and reproduced, of course, on the program.
Yeah.
And it started with the head of the church dancing with a skeleton, and worked all the way around the whole church down to a tiny little baby dancing with the skeleton. So every other figure was a skeleton, mm-hmm. And then the off ones of that were people of different walks of life, all, especially in those times, met with the same fate.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the dance of death, and that's what that was about. It was a multicultural kind of presentation. We had dancers from Jacob's Pillow, and we had spoken pieces. Dwayne Estes was basically God come to me, or perhaps he was the devil. I can't remember, to be perfectly honest. But
well,
he could have alternated. He could have done either. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But we had personalities from the town or surrounding towns that, mm-hmm. that took the parts of each human figure in the mural.
I remember that one distinctly. It was so outstanding and so different.
Yes, and I think that's what Christine tries to do, especially with the unpublished things.
Because
we've premiered in the United States at least three works that I can think of, but I can't remember names, but I can think of off the top of my head, having been the president for 3 years of the board. I was supposed to, you know, commit these to memory. I haven't. But I do remember doing them, and though I don't have perfect pitch, I have a good musical memory, so I can hear something in the radio. So, oh, I've sung that.
But
I can't look at a G on the staff and sing it.
Oh.
But I can start it there, and once I can start it there, I can go almost anywhere on the staff and you know, follow along.
I worked with a fellow that was a singer in his choir, and he couldn't read music. And I said, how can you sing if you can't read music? And he said, I have a tape, and I listen to it over and over again. I've always been able to read music, so for me that was an eye opener.
Yeah.
That you know, what do you mean you can't read music?
Well, I mean, I can read music, but you know, it's unpracticed, so I have to count or you know, start from one I know from a note I know on the staff and go up to the one I'm trying to figure out. You know, two ledger lines above the staff throw a loop to me every single time.
Oh, okay.
So I don't remember those off the top
of my head. Oh, dear. Now, you said you were treasurer of the board for 3 years.
I was treasurer, that's what got me on the board, basically, I think, because I went in as treasurer. I was, when I joined the board, Joe Loy was president at the time, and when I joined the board, I became treasurer. Or maybe 1 year without being treasurer, but very shortly thereafter, because Bill Kellett was the treasurer at the time. And I remember distinctly him coming to my house and talking to me and basically passing the torch.
Yep.
And then commenting on my wife's furniture, and that took more time than passing the torch to him. Anyway.
Oh, dear.
And that was for 3 years, and then there was a little bit of a mix-up in the hierarchy of the board and the hierarchy of the artistic side, and the next thing I knew, I came on board, and I was going to be the president with the next thing. So that's
okay.
So we worked hard and tried to smooth things over and get things back on track.
And obviously, you did.
Well, it seems that that's been successful. Yeah, but I, after 3 years, said, you know,
that's enough.
Well, it's important that you change that torch. You know, you don't get stuck in a rut. So I said, no, I'm gonna. So now I am where I should have been when I started, and I'm a spear carrier, and just one person in the chorus is all I am.
Oh, I like that about the spear carrier.
Yeah.
Do you know what the future plans are for Crescendo?
I think because of what was attempted and what the board didn't, the majority of the board didn't really want to do, I think it's going to pretty much stay as it is. Mm-hmm. You have to understand where we are in the world is not a huge market for unknown Baroque works.
No.
But I think that with Christine's talent and her way of presenting things, plus she will do very educational, I think, talks at the beginning of a concert.
Oh, yes.
And telling you exactly why she chose it and what it actually represents and what it meant during its time, which I think is very important for people to know because otherwise it's just, it's very nice music.
Yeah, but she does the educational
part. That's only half the picture.
Yeah, you do the educational part. I know she was very interested in Wanda Landowska.
Yes, still is.
And I just ordered from the library Chopin's piano, because that was a piano that Wanda Landowska purchased, and I had a request from somebody asking if she still had that piano here in Lakeville. And, of course, I was able to say no because all of her pianos and other keyboard instruments were taken by the Germans during World War II when she was at Saint-Lô.
Yes.
So that was a question I could answer without having to do too much research.
No research required.
Right? No research required. When did you go into the Housatonics?
Oh, that was kind of on a whim. I remember walking in there the first time, and they said, you know, what part do you want to play or sing? And at that time, I didn't know that when you have, you know, all guys that said SATB, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, we had TTBB, tenor one, tenor two, baritone, and bass. And I said, well, you know, I started out singing bass, at which time Charles, who's lived over by the lake, I can't remember his last name, but he was kind of the president of the Thomas, and he said to our leader, he said, what we need, and I don't know who it was at the time, and I've tried to find out, and I haven't been very successful, what we need is leads. And I said, well, I can try to sing that. Well, as it turns out, leads sing mostly melody.
Yeah.
And
that's a lot easier.
Boy, and most of the songs I knew anyway.
Sure. Oh, sure.
So it was some things I wanted to do. For instance, one of my grandfather's favorite songs that he would be caught singing from time to time if he thought he was alone was called Just a Wearyin' for You, which was a very beautiful, almost a love song, but fairly close harmony. And to be quite honest, I think it was too sweet for most of the guys to do. But it was close to my heart, of course, because it was my grandfather's favorite song. And it was a most melodic, most wonderful close harmony thing I'd heard in quite some time. And I'd hoped we could do it, we couldn't. But what they do is a lot of favorites, barbershop favorites. It's primarily barbershop. And for a time, Christine came, for 2 years anyway.
Yes.
2 or 3 years, Christine came and was our leader. And I remember with her, you know, her classical background, this was totally foreign to her.
Oh, yeah.
And I could tell she went home and studied it, because when she came back the next week, we were all singing dominant seventh, or you know, she started somewhere and we had to complete the chord to the dominant seventh, which once we got used to that, and then she told us, she did the research, and she said, that is one of the most favorite chords in barbershop singing, simply because of the seventh, which up to there is pretty predictable, but then all of a sudden you hit that and everybody goes, wow, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's a little zing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was, and so she learned an awful lot about that, and I did a pretty good job, but she was more inclined to do her Baroque work, and that's what she wanted to do. And of course, back then, we didn't have half the orchestras and half the semi-pros that we have now. Mm. And our concert, quite frankly, are expensive to put on, but you sit in that audience, and I think the ensemble gives the audience their money's worth. I think it gives us our money's worth well.
Yeah.
They're very good. And we have a lot of musicians that come back and want to come back with us. And some of them are pretty well known. Nicholas Tamagna is, you know, known basically throughout the world. He also sings countertenor, which I always wonder where the sound's coming from when I hear him sing. I can't, it's so, you know.
Can you spell his name?
Nicholas, Tamagna, Tamagna.
Again?
Tamagna. Nicholas is, oh yeah, you can look him up. Tama, Tamagna, yeah. Gna.
G what?
Na. It would be pronounced Tamagna, but it's Gna.
And he's a Nicholas.
He's a Nicholas, and he is. He's basically. I mean, for instance, the last concert we just did, this is crescendo.
Okay,
yes, ma'am.
I don't want to get mixed up here.
I know. I understand. But the last concert that he did for us, as soon as he was done, he ran out of there. I made sure he had his check because that was my job then to give those out. He ran out of there, he bid everyone goodbye, and his next stop was Newark Airport, and after that, he was in Europe, to sing in Europe for, I don't know, I think he's there singing for about 6 weeks. Mm. And I think he's presently back in the United States, but he's off again soon. But
she's got a lot of connections.
Boy, I'll say, yeah.
The last concert that I went to was a harpsichordist, who we got between the Metropolitan. And then there was another famous concert that he was doing, and he came on a Saturday night and played at Trinity.
He's been here before.
Yeah. Polish gentleman.
Yes, Ladislaw.
Yeah.
And his And his brother came, Boguslaw, and his brother and his wife stayed at our house for the two nights.
And Alice Gustafson.
And Alice had,
three or four of them.
Yep. Oh, okay. Alice loves hosting. She has a good time with us. Nicholas always stays with Alice.
Oh, she has a good time with everybody. All right. Who runs the Housatonics?
Presently, the Housatonics are headed up by Donnie Sosin.
Okay.
Prefers to be called Donnie.
He really does prefer to be called?
There's Donnie or Donald. Does not like Don.
Oh, okay. How many men are in the group?
Oh, I think there's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's only about 16 to 18. I'm not sure. And
it's a large catchment area that they come from. I mean, they're not all.
We have some from Great Barrington.
Yeah.
And Housatonic, Massachusetts, and we have people from Lakeville, such as myself. So they all come to sing.
Well, yeah.
But we found. And I have to emphasize that when I wanted to really learn music and learn technique and learn how to sing the right way, you sang with Christine. When you wanted to have fun, you sang with the Housatonics.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I would agree with that 100%.
Yep. So, and it was, I mean, it was fun. For years the Housatonics did the same thing until last recently we did a big sing-along.
And that was fun.
It was fun, and people didn't want to leave. And we were, normally at our concert, it was three sets of music. And we had a great dinner at Salisbury School.
Yep.
And those guys, they put on a great meal, and or two of them, actually. One was Saturday night dinner, and the next second was Sunday brunch. Sunday brunch we always like better. I don't know why that is. I think it was the variety. But in any case, we had a large house full for both of those performances. And everybody had fun, but Donnie did notice that when you asked people to sing along, they did so wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. And so we did a whole big sing along and it was
a sellout.
Yeah, SRO, standing room only in that room at the Congregational Church, and we had the projector set up, projected the words up on a screen.
They were big enough I didn't have to have my glasses on.
And they were almost, it reminded me, I said, this is almost like new churches nowadays.
Yeah.
There's no hymnals. Which to me, of course, means there's no music, so I can't sing. I don't have the bass memorized, so I can't sing any of the bass lines to the hymnals like I do half the time.
I like our hymnal.
I do too, but these new up and coming churches, the ones that are kind of multi denominational or universally denominational or what, have these. They have praise bands, they have praise choirs, different people. It's a lot of rocking around, and everybody sings by watching TV screens, and that's. At my age, that's a departure from what I consider to be normal.
Yeah, I agree with you. The Housatonics, where do they practice?
We practice in the Fellowship Hall of the Congregational Church, which is essentially behind the sanctuary.
Yep. And on Thursday nights?
Thursday nights, that's where we practice, yep. Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9, with, don't forget, time out for cookies.
Oh, God.
Yep.
It's like TLC with the cookies.
Right, right. And they have, and everybody, every guy takes a turn bringing in something every on different Thursday nights.
Oh, it used to be with a Rotary Club that they would do a bake sale, and the men had to do the baking.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, the Rotary Club used to meet in our church for quite a while, right? For their
48 years. Well, the Methodist Church.
You know more about that than I do.
Oh, yeah. Adeline Fitz.
Oh, yeah.
Talked about it, and Marion Haberly.
Oh, I remember Mary.
Talked about it.
She was a good friend. She was a very good friend.
And Foster loved Emma's meatloaf. Pollock's meatloaf.
Emma Pollock.
Yeah. And I asked Nancy Pollock for the recipe, and she says, you don't want it. She can only make it for 50. Oh, dear. Are there future plans for the Housatonics?
Housatonics will hang on for as long as they possibly can. We are always on the search for... For younger people, I think the average age of the gentleman in the Housatonics is somewhere in the 70s.
Probably.
What was his name? Roger? What was Roger's last name? He lived in Canaan. He was singing with us till he was at 96 years old. He's a great bridge player, too, Roger was.
Oh, good.
Gosh, I can't remember his last name. Another one on the yellow in the middle of nowhere. But he sang with us for a long time, and... any age, you still have a voice.
If you still have a voice, yeah.
Exactly, and we'll find a place for it. I know they will, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In no time. And plus you get to sing next to each other. Before you know it, you know the songs anyway.
Oh, sure.
I mean, we have a typical Solidarity song, which comes from, what is that called, SPEPSQA, the Society for the Preservation of of Barbershop Singing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's some huge, very labored acronym.
Now, Lee Collins
started it
in 86.
Uh-huh.
And then who was director?
I should do some historical work and figure that out for you, because I think Lee was there for quite some time. I know, yeah. Monty Stone did it for a while. We had that young Canadian girl who was very, very good. I can't remember her name.
She was
unfortunately brief, because she was not let back into the country when she went into Canada.
Right.
So,
and then it was Christine?
And then it was... No, but Christine was before her. And then I think Donnie did it for a while early on.
Yes, he did.
I'm pretty sure
and
he
this
did.
Is
and
his
then he
second.
Came back. This is his second win, so to speak.
Okay.
And then, right. Yeah, but and he's just a master of the piano. Like I tell people, you know, if they ask, for some reason don't know who Donald Tolson is, and they ask me, you know, who is he? I said, well, he's you know, the head of us, and he's also in great demand as the piano player for silent movies all over the world. Mm-hmm. I said, and he can play a piano as well as you can whistle.
Yeah.
And it's just that easy for him. So, I'm sure it came with hours and hours and hours of practice.
With a lot of natural talent.
Well, yeah, there is a lot of natural talent. But, I mean, I found, even if I, you know, I used to play key of C, but then I had to play something in a different key, and now I find my hands can go to those chords.
Yeah.
Almost automatically.
Yeah.
That's rehearsal. That's practice.
Oh, yeah.
That's muscle memory is what that is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that seems to work. As I said, I don't have perfect pitch, but I have very good musical memory. And a lot of, back at the Kent Singers, when John LaFleur retired, we had a husband and wife team that came in, and they were both musicians, and we had a very nice time with them. They were a lot of fun, and he said, when he said, here's the starting note, sing something here, and I could not do that, not very well. Here's, you know, I'd give you a but then he'd play it for me. He says, no, sing it again. He just and I could not miss a note, or maybe one, and he said, I find this more and more, that people who can't sight read music, and that's what they basically call a sight read.
Yeah.
And I think personally, you need perfect pitch in order to be able to do that.
It helps.
Yeah, I can imagine it helps with a lot of things.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, as some people say, it makes you not appreciate concerts more, because sometimes you can see more mistakes.
True.
Yeah.
True.
And I find that if it's a piece I know, I can find the mistakes right away.
Yeah, and that is annoying.
Yeah, I can well imagine in a concert that's beautiful, and all of a sudden something happens. I can imagine that. Yeah. That's quite off-putting, basically.
Yeah, because you don't want to remember the concert for the mistakes. You want to remember it for the beautiful music.
And believe me, you don't want to make mistakes with Christine.
I know.
Yeah, they're pointed
out. Firsthand.
They're pointed out, yeah. And it's...
Well, that's how you learn.
It is how you learn. So I will keep trying to fix my voice in hopes that I can go back. And some days are better than others, but we'll see what happens. It could be a question of age. It could be a question of
stress for the vocal cords.
Yeah, it could be. But I noticed it getting less and less reliable is what it boiled down to.
Mm-hmm.
And that was over a period of a couple of years. I mean, I remember once when I finally quit smoking in 2000, January 1st, 2000. Because it stunted my growth. And
yeah, 5'19".
Yeah, but I finally did quit. And when I did, about a month after I quit, I lost my voice completely.
Ooh.
Couldn't talk, couldn't sing. And I went to see our doctor here in town. What's his name? He's an ENT guy. He's over in New York State now. He lives on Wells Hill Road. Again, I'm bad with names. And he sent me right down to Dr. Peak Wu in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And as a physics major, that was more fun than worrying about my voice, because I got to watch him put the light, the little tiny strobe light down my throat, and the camera.
Yeah.
And then you could watch on his computer, you could watch your vocal cords move.
Mm-hmm.
And then, due to electronics, he could make it out of phase with the light.
Ooh.
I mean, if you put the light, you have a microphone on your throat, if you put the light on the microphone and make it in phase with the microphone, then it will freeze your vocal cords. They won't, they'll look like they're not moving. Mm-hmm. But what's really happening is the light's coming on when they're at the exact same place every single time.
Oh, my.
That's how it works. It's called a stroboscope. And then you can make it dysphasic. Take it out of phase, and then you can make them move in slow motion. Ooh. Because they're only out of phase. It's kind of like watching propellers on a film go one way and then the other way, and then at one time they're stopped. That's when it's a harmonic of how fast the film's going through.
Wonderful.
And so that's how it worked, and I had a great time. And it was because we made stroboscopes out of wood and with slits in them and rotated with your finger. You still did the same thing.
Oh,
you made
sure.
Any repetitive thing, you could stop it. So that was my great fun with my voice, and there was never any diagnosis. He basically said, there's nothing wrong. Yeah, but I can't talk. But then the voice was coming back, it did. It all came back, and the song and the singing came back. And then suddenly, like 4 years ago, it started to degenerate, and now here it is 4 years later. And I think I know why, and it's probably dehydration, so we'll work on it and see what happens. Okay. I went to him, and I went to another guy about this, and they both said, one said it's, acid reflux. Which I didn't think it was. And the other one was Dr. N.
That's all right.
And yeah, I know. Anyway, it drives me crazy. That's all. And he said, I really can't find anything wrong. He says maybe it's just a product of age, which is entirely possible.
It could be.
So
or a combination of age and dehydration.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be.
And I told you that I talked to it's Perry's last name, but he comes from Canaan, and his wife works in hospitals, especially in critical care units. Mm-hmm. And her basic phrase about men is, if you're 70, you're dehydrated. Period.
Yeah. Okay.
And I said, it's entirely possible. It's not for lack of trying. But apparently scotch doesn't count.
Oh, gee. Darn.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about as far as the singing is concerned?
For myself, we pretty much ran through my whole career, which was, it was not something I grew up trying to do. It was something I did because I liked it.
That's important.
And when you like something, you study it better.
True.
And so I learned an awful lot more about music than I did in piano lessons at the age of 11, 12, and 13.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was one of my first curtain speeches was, does anyone know what hemiola is? Because I said, I'm supposed to be singing for them tonight, and I have no idea what they are. And that brought the house down because then I told them about, you go look them up, and I looked it up online, and there was, I can't remember who the musician was, it wasn't Leonard Bernstein, but it was somebody pretty famous, and he said, hemiolas are hard. That was his analysis of it. They're very hard. So I didn't feel so bad that I had trouble with them, but it's a rhythm thing, and it's so common that it's got a name, sort of like the same thing that the devil in music is a tritone.
Right.
Well, I learned about those. And that sounds terrible. And yet, she brought in a piece that was, the whole piece was written in tritones.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But it was definitely not what you're used to.
And it was definitely hard.
They said it was very hard to play. It was very hard for musicians to play. And some of the things that she's not averse to getting things hard for musicians to play because she's paying them. And they all say that they get their feet held to the fire at some of our concerts in some cases. But Chris Belluccio plays that they call it, I can't remember, but it's a trumpet that doesn't have the notorious three valves in it.
Mm-hmm.
It does have holes in the bottom, almost like a recorder would if it was straight.
Yeah.
It does have holes along one too, but it's not as easy to play, and the stuff he plays is just phenomenal out of that very old instrument.
It's not a sack butt.
No, sackbutt is like a trombone.
That's right, that's right.
And when I first heard that, I said, it's just some name they made in some Western saloon. No,
it's a medieval instrument.
And there's a lot of them. I mean, Kent Singers, we sang, that was with Margaret. We sang Dr. Margaret Millet. Two E's, one with X, the first one with X and A-U. And Dr. Margaret Millet was with the Kent Singers for about 4 or 5 years, and she had a PhD in music, musical pedagogy, in other words, in teaching music. And she said she had us do a Messiah, and we hired some musicians. We had two theorbos, and I said to these, "What do you do? I play second theorbo." I said, "What a great thing!" What a great thing in life. But that was the most amazing, having being a guitar player, that was the most amazing instrument I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And now she has this young fella, Hideki, can't remember his last name, but he plays three or four Baroque string instruments, the lute, and there's ones I don't know. But they're all strange looking, and they all sound different, but they all sound wonderful.
Yeah.
As long as you have to put yourself in, again, you have to put yourself in that era.
Oh, sure.
To listen to reason, you know, because, you know, nowadays you can push a button and get great music.
It's not so, the same as...
No, it's nowhere near the same, but you can do it, you know.
It's the difference between a CD and vinyl.
Yep.
Because with the CD, you don't get the dynamic range.
You can't.
You can't.
No. Because you can't move something as fast as light can move.
No. And that's why my husband very much preferred vinyl.
Vinyl. Oh, yeah. Well, it's the older stuff that was perfected, I think, better. There are people today that still prefer tube-type amplifiers.
He had a tube amplifier.
Yeah.
And a preamp.
Yeah. Oh, and a preamp makes a big difference, too, if you want, you know, wider range of frequencies. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I digress because I got too many schools going on in my head. But anyway, the one thing I would say about singing is if you ever have any doubts about it, but you like it, go do it. You'll feel a lot better.
Thank you.
Okay, good.